Trending Mobile Technology, Episode 96, hosted right here on the TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. Microsoft makes a splash with Windows 10. Google advances on some old and new projects. Apple makes many waves with their Touch to Pay. And BlackBerry is on the scene today, bitching about, quote, being fair, unquote. Trending Mobile Technology starts now. I am your host, Piper the DJ, right here on the horn with you, as always. Now, before things get too carried away, as always, contact information in the unlikely event you have missed out. The handle, Piper the DJ, is mine. You can use that on just about any form of media in contact, including Gmail, Twitter, and Google+. Do not look for Piper the DJ on Facebook, because that will not take you to me. I had a couple people say, I'm trying to find you on Facebook. I keep saying, don't find me on Facebook. I don't use that very often. So Google+, Gmail, or Twitter. Handle is Piper the DJ, and we can move forward from there. Now, as I did say, Microsoft is heavy in the news, and I will be getting to that before the show is over. But right now, last week, I did bring down a movie from Xiaomi, and I got the specs for the Mi Note Pro. In a related story last week, Xiaomi's new device is supposed to be making some waves for Apple. And in a new PR campaign, actually, that they produced, they brought out a frying pan, and they actually hit their phone. They did some cool CGI and some cool overlays and some pretty cool other stuff, and they're claiming that it is thinner than the iPhone 6 Plus, which, some people claim the iPhone 6 Plus is thin, it's cool looking and everything like that, but they bring to light the bulge of a camera sensor. If you take an iPhone 6 Plus, get a hold of an image or something like that, look at the camera, you'll notice there's a bit of a bulge there. The folks at Xiaomi with the Mi Note Pro, that is Mi Note Pro, have claimed that it is flat on the back of their device to where the camera doesn't bulge out. More information on that as it is available. And the folks at GSM Arena have come to my aid in providing me the specs for the device. It hasn't been released yet, but current speculation, design features and performance all ranging well over the 8 on 10 mark. It'll be available for all the resident networks that are currently on the market with a 155 by 77 by 7 millimeters. So it's going to be pretty thin. It's going to have Gorilla Glass 3 on the back with a dual SIM, a micro SIM, and a nano SIM for dual SIM capability. It's going to have an IPS LCD display with 16 million colors, 5.7-inch display with a PPI of 515, and a 74.4% screen-to-body ratio. It will be compatible with multi-touch, so for those of you who like to draw with your hand and everything like that, if you rest your hand on the screen, you'll still be able to use your finger. If you have a couple fingers that tend to touch the screen while you're doing something else, it's not supposed to be able to detect that. This one will come out fresh out of the box with 501 Lollipop with a Qualcomm 810 chipset and a 1.5 gigahertz Cortex quad-core CPU. It won't have a SD card slot. See last week's commentary for SD capabilities. It will come in 64 gig sizes with 4 gigs of RAM. The camera is going to be 13 megapixel shooter in the back and a 4 megapixel shooter in the front for selfies. It's going to have a rear-facing camera as well as a 3.5 jack and all the respective hookups. Now, the big question that we have on this is battery life, because this one's going to come with a 3090 mAh battery. Compare that to the 2915 that the iPhone 6 Plus currently offers. Yes, there's a bit of a different battery. However, this will fall back to the software. And I know last week I went in a great big old thing about how I try not to compare software to software, but this is hardware-based. So the software determines the battery life. You could have the biggest battery you want, but if you have a software that operates inefficiently, then you're going to run into problems. What this actually means in an Android versus iOS, lots of people in the iOS camp are citing that the 8.1 operating system is very battery efficient. There's also folks with newer devices citing that the 5.0 builds, or the 5.1 and 5.2 builds are a lot more battery efficient as well. I did receive some communication from Mr. Old School up north. He has a first generation Nexus 7. He did receive the 5.0 Lollipop build for his tablet, citing that he's having some performance issues. There are many issues in the first release of 5.0 when it first came out on the older generation devices, citing that there were some performance issues. A couple folks reported battery issues, things of that nature. Google promptly came around and released 5.0.1. They've also released 5.0.2. Some devices are coming down with the 5.0.3 build now. Just be advised, if you have an older device, you are likely to have some issues. That Google actually went on the books and cited that. Whether this is an encouragement to get you to upgrade to a newer device, I have my opinions about it. I tell people, upgrade your device between 2 and 3 years. That's just the rule of thumb that I use. Other people have different rules of thumb, but it all depends on what you want your device to do and how you want it to be able to operate. Now, in the 5.0.1 and 5.0.2 builds respectively, there have been significant performance upgrades, so just be aware of that. But if you do have an older device, just be ready to understand that you're going to have some lag issues. Sometimes a little bit of patience will fix it, and things of that nature. A lot of that is a direct result of the extra features that are added to the 5.0 build, multitasking, for example. I found myself to be an avid user of the multitasking once I figured out how to work it and how it can incorporate into my lifestyle. So that's one of the pros. There's also cons. Like I said, older systems that might have slower processors, lower on RAM, etc. That could also be something that could, you know, might have a difficulty keeping track of everything in RAM. One thing that did come to mind is everybody remember that the more information you have on your device, the lower benchmarks it's going to have. So if you're noticing performance issues in your device, just think about, okay, so how much music do I have on here? How many movies do I have on here? Everything of that nature. If you've got stuff on there that you don't need, it might help to remove some of that to get it out. Also, you can monitor your background processes and see what happens with that as well. If you're like me, you spend a lot of time looking at background processes just for the simple fact that on older devices, I was really concerned about battery life. And I also found that going through and limiting background processes, manually terminating background processes, or setting up schemes to where certain processes are just automatically shut off. That was the biggest gripe that I had going against TouchWiz, was because there was no way for me to disable it. If I was running a TouchWiz-based ROM or a Samsung-based ROM, I had TouchWiz running no matter what I did. Now, you can get around that by installing CyanogenMod, mod, rooting and ROMing your device, changing things around, getting access to the memory and all that kind of thing. But the biggest thing to remember is that if you have processes that are, it's called running away. They're called runaway processes. If you have processes that are running away, that will cut down on your processor creativity. Every electronic device, whether it be a laptop, tablet, desktop computer, they all have these problems. They just have different ways of managing them. If you're in a Windows base, you have Task Manager. If you have a Mac base, they also have their force quit for applications and programs that are running away as well. So that's something that you can keep an eye on. And if you have more questions, feel free to reach out, and I'll be more than happy to assist you in things of that nature. Project Aura is an older project that Google has been talking about for quite a while. It's the modular cell phone, and last year when it made another emergence, I was really excited about it, and I was determined that that was going to be my next device that I got. I did wind up getting a Nexus 6, but Project Aura is making a resurgence on an article released 21 January on The Verge. Project Aura will be making its release in Puerto Rico sometime by the end of Q1 2015. Now, if it's actually going to get to the Americas, that hasn't been determined yet, but there are a lot of developers that are producing a lot of different modules for this device. It's definitely going to be something that I watch with interest to see what exactly happens. Some of these sensors are determined or designed to turn your device into many different things. They have an actual heart rate sensor. They have an actual BP cuff that you can plug into it for those that have high blood pressure. There was a rumor of a glucose testing kit that was actually produced for this, as well as multiple different camera mods and battery mods and various things of that nature as well. Modular phone, customizable phone. What's your poison? You know, what do you like? What do you want it to do? How do you want your device to be able to move forward? And the whole thing comes down to, is there a mod or is there something for this device that's going to entice you to go out and buy it? Current price point, you're looking at about $200 for the skeleton plus the mods that go with it that they're currently citing will range anywhere from $50 to $100 per mod. There are designs on the internet to where if you have access to a 3D printer that you can design these mods yourself and use them as well. Lots of magnets are involved in keeping everything together, and it actually survived a 4-foot drop test based on the information that's available. And that's something that sounds kind of interesting. Now, once again, this goes back to me and my preference of putting my device in a case. If this actually comes to fruition and makes its way to my hip, I'm going to have to decide, do I want this in a case? And if I have to change a module out, how is that going to affect A, the case, and B, my time in swapping it out? So different things for people to think about, different ways for you to go about your life as usual. Now, as the Nexus 6 does continue to go around, many people are starting to produce posts. This one coming off of Pocket Now. After having the Nexus 6 for over a month, would I buy it again? And a lot of people are saying the size of the Nexus 6 is an issue. Now, the biggest thing I have to come down to is with the Nexus 6, it is a bigger device. And if you're upgrading from a Nexus 5, yeah, it's a big jump. If you're upgrading from a Nexus 4, it's an even bigger jump. Okay? But once again, though, the jumps are in an effort to keep the Nexus on the cutting edge of the smartphone and quote-unquote phablet, even though I'm getting to a point where I don't really like that term, combination tablet and phone. It's getting to a point where that term is just kind of starting to... I'm not liking it as much as I used to. I used to like the term, but a lot of people are using it now for anything over 5 inches. And devices that are over 5 inches are more commonplace than just about any place else. And whether or not the advancement of the phablet industry turns into something beneficial or not is yet to be determined. But phones are getting bigger, tablets are getting smaller. If you get a tablet, you actually have a reason for a tablet. I think tablets going to sit between 9 and 16 inches from here on out. I think they found the sweet spot to be right around 10 and a half perhaps, depending on your manufacturer. Phones, that's got me a little worried, okay, because we're getting to a point where if the phones keep getting bigger, we're going to be carrying 7-inch devices in our pockets here before long. And that is just, that's something that kind of concerns me. I'm not quite sure how much of a bigger device I want to have in my pocket or on my hip. I'm reminded of a conversation that Mr. Old School and I had at one point in time. With the current progression, soon we're going to be carrying laptops around using those as phones. And I really hope that it stops before it gets to that point. I'm sitting here reading through notes off of my Nexus 7, and I'm really hoping that the form factor for the phone stops before it hits the 7-inch, okay? If it gets up over 6 inches, I'm not really sure I can pull the trigger on that one because it's getting a little big. It's getting a little bulky. The Nexus 6 at 5.9 inches, it has its points where it's a little big. Like when I'm at work, I'm running around all the time. I have a belt that I wear at work for various things that I have to carry on my person at all times. And so finding a place to put it is a hard thing to do. Then I have to worry about, well, how safe and secure is it going to be where I put it if I slide it in my back pocket or something of that nature. You know, granted, my Nexus is in a case, and that will help it in the movement and the protection of it. But at the same time, the size is going to become a problem very soon, okay? So as we continue with phones getting bigger, where's the breaking line on that? And this week's question of the week, as a matter of fact, how big is too big for you? Okay, 5.9 is a current Nexus 7, current Nexus 6. Next step up is going to be 6 inches, 6.5, and probably 7. Once we get to the 7-inch form factor, that's tablet size. And I really hope and pray that we do not get to that size with the phone form factor. I like to keep that differentiation between the two. I don't want to get to a point where I'm actually carrying a tablet on my hip. I like to keep my devices under 6 inches, and if it sits on 5.9 for the rest of its existence, which I highly doubt it will, but that's always something to think about. Last week, Google announced that they are in talks with T-Mobile and Sprint about becoming an MVNO for airtime. That story has since been updated to where Google, after conversations with T-Mobile and Sprint, they said, yep, but no comment. That story has since been updated to where Google has approached Cablevision. Now, Cablevision in the United States is dominated pretty much by Comcast. There's a couple other guys that they all kind of work together to provide cable service. But if you're an individual like me, I'm a cord cutter, okay? As long as I have an internet connection, I'm good to go. I'm not concerned about Cablevision. The speculation behind this story, based on the information from the Wall Street Journal, is that it's going to use the Wi-Fi networks that are available for broadband, so you can go from one to the other. Towers will be minimized, and that's just, I'm not sure, because some people, such as myself, are cable cutters, and I don't think that this is going to be something that will work in Google's favor. Now, there was a suggestion that I read online where Google needs to get everything together and approach all of the carriers, whether it be in the United States or Canada or overseas in the UK or Asia, South America, you name it. Google needs to approach these individuals in the regions and say, look, everybody has free roaming. Well, almost everybody has free roaming. So here's our devices. Here's what we'll produce. We produce a universal SIM so that no matter where you are, you have the best coverage. And in the United States, you might be on a Verizon tower one day and on a T-Mobile tower another day, or an AT&T tower one day and a Sprint tower the next, depending on where you're located. And understand, that's just for the United States. If you're in Canada, their major producer of cell service is Rogers. So they might be on Rogers one day, TELUS another day. I don't remember the other carriers that are up there. But this would be something that would require quite a bit of footwork for Google to get accomplished. You know, they think that they can, that they'll be able to support a mobile industry based on apps. And whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I haven't fully decided yet. It's one of those things where it's currently in talks, it's currently in the works, and I'm not fully sold on it 100%. But as more information comes out, this is currently being dubbed by the folks at Google as Project Nova. So we'll see what happens in the future with that. It might be one of those things that they announced it, and then it's just going to go on the back burner for now to see what happened. If you've been following the stories on Project Aura, it makes the news, and then it goes on the back burner for 6 months, and then it makes the news again. It gets the hype all going again, and it's on the back burner again for 6 months. So it might be one of those slow build things. We'll have to see what happens and move on from there. Samsung has actually gone on the books, and they released their first Tizen device, which is the Samsung Z1. And they came out and they released it in a developing market in India. And unfortunately, it didn't release with what they thought it would do. Many people citing that, quote, Samsung has been delaying the launch of this Tizen phone for such a long time. Now they finally did. And it turns out that it's underpowered, unquote. Well, if it's underpowered, it's not overwhelming. And they simply, I mean, they learned with the release of the Galaxy S5 that the device has to be overwhelming. It has to be phenomenal. It has to be liked. It has to be able to step in and utilize what it needs. Another comment concerning the Samsung Z1 is a simple comparison with any Android One phone will tell you exactly what the Z1 is missing. Now, the Z1 is Tizen-based, and so therefore it is loaded, and I mean loaded, with the Samsung sauce, meaning it doesn't have access to the Android Play Store. It doesn't have access to the Amazon Play Store. Now, you can sideload those things, but the biggest thing to remember is if you are not fully immersed and overwhelmed by the Samsung sauce, this device is not for you. Developers in the Samsung Tizen market only have a couple hundred apps for the Tizen operating system. So therefore, you're already looking at limitations. Majority of the apps that you currently run on an Android-powered device will not be able to accommodate many of these unless you root in ROM. And that is a totally different size and scenario and various things of that nature. But overall specs for this device is you're looking at a 4-inch display, so it's a little bit smaller. Got a 1.2 gigahertz dual-core processor with a 0.3 megapixel front camera. You're looking at a 480 by 800 pixel with 768 RAM. A lot of people are saying that this is a very efficient device. Okay, the battery capacity is only 1500 mAh, but at the same time, Tizen is supposed to be extremely battery efficient. White sheets coming in off the Samsung Galaxy Gear, which was their first watch iteration, was lasting 2 to 3 days based on heavy usage. So the 1500 mAh battery might be comparable. Current pricing for this is about $300 US, and it's looking like it could be a break, but a lot of people are looking at this kind of raising their eyebrows, myself especially. Is this the direction that Samsung wants to go? I mean, if they're going to be releasing extra devices, they want to stay competitive in this market, they have to be overwhelming, especially if it's going to be their device. No current reviews on this device yet, outside of the fact that it is underwhelming and the two comments that I cited earlier in this show. And a story coming in from the folks at Techno Buffalo for Q4 of 2014, this coming all the way into 31 December, story released on 21 January. Apple, the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus take a huge slice out of Samsung's pie at home. This is coming in off the Korean market. Samsung popularity in the Korean market for 2014 started at well over 60% and have dropped all the way down to 46% as of December 2014, where Apple popularity started well under 10% and is now sitting at a 33% market share. What this actually means for the folks at Samsung on their home turf, not quite sure, but there is a little bit of worry. I mean, are people in the Samsung camp who are getting out of it, are they getting out of it because they're tired of Samsung, or is Samsung just being underwhelming as usual? What are we going to do with this? I'm not quite sure, but it is interesting to know exactly how far this is going to go and exactly what Samsung is going to do to try and capture that market share again. With the release of the Z1, the outlook for the Galaxy S6, of which I do have the quote-unquote leak specs for this device, which I will be getting into before I'm done here today, we will exactly see. But as it stands right now, Samsung has a little bit of work to do because they are losing ground on their home turf. Samsung is a Korean-based market, and it is a Korean-based company. And to see Apple, an American-made company, an American-made device, to see them make a jump like that in the end of 2014, I mean, it might be on account of the popularity of the iPhone 6 and the 6 Plus. It might be the fact that people are getting tired of the Samsung sauce. I don't quite know at this point, but as of 2014 in December, Apple had taken a major share out of that. I mean, making a huge jump. And at this rate, Apple could be very well number one in Korea, which would mean a lot of big problems for Samsung. When I read a story like this, I look at it and say, I think Samsung might be spreading themselves a little bit too thin. Or they might have accomplished what they wanted to, and now it's just time to move forward. Maybe the ooh shiny has finally worn off for people, and they're looking at it from the position that, well, maybe not so much. I don't know. But we will see exactly what we will see, and more news on this as it is available. The official numbers for December globally will be released here very shortly. I'm expecting them to be here probably by the end of this month or perhaps the middle of next month, and we'll see exactly what goes on from there. Stay tuned to Trending Mobile Technology as more information on the downfall of Samsung will come up more and more. T-Mobile. Yes, I do have another T-Mobile story. Why do I have a T-Mobile story? Well, I'm a T-Mobile user. I know plenty of people that are moving to T-Mobile. And John Legere, and the way that he's running this company is just, it's phenomenal. You want to talk about a guy that is no bones about it. He will come out and he will tell you exactly what he thinks. And he will do exactly what he does. And in a press release released 22 January, T-Mobile CEO John Legere announces, quote, smartphone equality. Low credit customers can now get great deals too. The story goes on where John Legere actually went on and he produced a video blog reporting that individuals who have been with T-Mobile on the prepaid service and have 12 months of good service payments. That means you've gone an entire year with T-Mobile continuing to make your payments without a single day late or anything of that nature. You will qualify for a smartphone upgrade at minimal payments. Now, if you utilize a jump plan or a lease plan or some type of postpaid plan, every time they run your credit and every time they look and say, okay, this is what we can, this is what we can't do. However, with this plan that John Legere just announced, which will be available by 1 February, you will be able to, if you are a current T-Mobile user, you will be able to go into a T-Mobile store, upgrade your old device to a flagship phone, and be able to maintain minimal usage. This is a good thing for people. I mean, there's lots of people that are still running around with feature phones. I don't see too awful many flip phones around anymore, but you know, they might be the bar style or an older device or something of that nature. Remember the story I spoke about last week concerning Google falling under fire for Jelly Bean devices no longer being supported. This is, I think, is something, a tool that people can use. And I use the word tool in a positive context here. People can utilize this as a tool to upgrade their device to help patch some of these security vulnerabilities that they might be susceptible to. Now, understand, as I said last week, the security vulnerabilities that are currently on the Android operating system are a direct result of using the old browser. If you upgrade your browser to something current, such as Chrome, Firefox, you can get around a majority, I'm not saying all, a majority of these security holes. And that's something that works in favor of Google because, you know, they're not offering the patches for the older operating systems. I still hold on to the claim, despite what anybody else says. It is not up to Google. They've made the operating system update available to the manufacturers. It's the manufacturers that are not upgrading the devices. And that falls down to, ultimately, the folks at Samsung, the folks at HTC, the folks at Motorola. You know, it falls down to them because they're not rolling out the update like they should. Now, understand, with the sauce of the respective OEMs, it goes from the OEM, and then it goes to the carrier, because the carrier has to add their sauce to it, and then it gets rolled out to the user. When I went in and bought my Nexus 6, I was talking very candidly to the agent that was assisting me, and I said, is this going to have the T-Mobile stuff built into it? And she looked at me and she said, what do you mean? And I listed off the T-Mobile proprietary applications that are usually cooked into a T-Mobile ROM. And she said, yes. Is there a way to get them off of your device? She asked me this. As a user herself, she finds them annoying. Personally speaking, I use a couple of them. Okay, I do. That's just part of being in the T-Mobile universe, or app-verse, whichever way you want to call it. Unfortunately, there's no way to remove the cooked in or the sauce unless you root your device. And then rooting your device takes you into a totally different realm of things that some people don't want to worry about. But the bottom line is, as I said last week, and I'm going to continue saying it as long as this story continues to be a sore spot for some people, it's not up to Google. They've released the updated OS. They've done what they're supposed to do. It's up to the OEM, the manufacturer of the device, to get the structured rollout to their users in a timely basis. If they're not going to do it, then ultimately the suggestion I can make to you is switching to Nexus or getting a new device. And unfortunately, it pains me to say that for the simple fact that there's a lot of good devices out there and there's a lot of good manufacturers that are out there. But if they don't have what it takes to keep up, or refuse to do what it takes to keep up, they're going to wind up falling by the wayside on this one. Now, as I did mention, the Galaxy S6 is currently the talk of the town. A lot of people bringing that into hard context, or actually hard voice, because the official quote-unquote specs have been leaked. This story coming in off of the Inquisitor earlier this week, citing, quote, a CPU that's 50% faster to an incredible quad-core HD display. Samsung hit every angle with this year's flagship phone. It'll also have a payment feature that works with magnetic and NFC terminal. Incredible camera and a gorgeous glass and metal body. Unquote. There's two different ways to look at this, folks. NFC, magnetic touch to pay. It's all Samsung-based. You have to program this stuff into the Samsung sauce, okay? I do have a story about Apple and their tap-to-pay, which I will be getting into here very shortly. But am I interested in the Samsung sauce? No, I'm not. Is this going to be compatible with Google Wallet or something of that nature? If it is, it might be a good thing. Google Wallet does have their own app on the Android Play Store, and it's something that people can use, but once again, it is terminal base. Specs for this device are as follows. There's going to be a 64-bit, 8-core, 14-nanometer CPU with a 5.5-inch quad HD Super AMOLED display with a 577 PPI density. That is classified as HD. That's going to be a good-looking display. It's going to be very bright. 20-megapixel shooter in the back with OIS. It's going to come in 32, 64, and 128 gig sizes. Now, Samsung ROMs are huge to start with. So in the 32 gig size, you're going to have probably maybe two-thirds of your memory to use. So remember that. Also remember, if you have more space, you have an opportunity to run into more problems, potentially. No report right now if there's going to be an SD card on this, but it is going to have a 2550 mAh battery, which is a little bit under par, but it does have wireless charging built into it, as well as quick charging with the sighting of, quote, 4 hours of usage on a 10-minute charge. Now, knowing what we know about TouchWiz, and knowing what we know about Samsung, and knowing what we know about the Samsung sauce, 4 hours in 10 minutes is not very good. All right? It's not. Getting 4 hours out of a 10-minute charge based on a quick charge usage, that's not very good. Now, the Motorola Nexus 6, they have 8 hours on 15. Once again, use case, depending on who you are and how you use your device, that could be good. That could also be bad. It's going to have Samsung Pay built into it. It's going to have a Quick Connect charger, as well as a metal and glass body and Gorilla Glass 4 with all the respective hookups for wireless capability. Exactly what does all of this mean? Not quite sure. Is it overwhelming? We'll see. I mean, we have yet to see if they're going to get the 502 Android on it. We have yet to see all the other Samsung stuff that they're going to put on it, or how the TouchWiz is going to be upgraded to accommodate the type of power drain. Speculated release date or announcement date for this is going to be at Mobile World Congress, which is supposed to be sometime in February. Now, I also mentioned that BlackBerry is in the news this week. And a couple weeks ago, I got into a conversation with Mr. Old School concerning BlackBerry, because he is my authority when it comes to BlackBerry devices. And he and I had a little bit of a conversation on Twitter. And Mr. Old School said, in reference to BlackBerry, quote, "They did a good thing when they allowed Android apps to be installed on their devices. Bottom line, they need to eliminate their OS," end quote. Get rid of the BlackBerry Enterprise server, get rid of BlackBerry overall, give it an overlay, make it more compatible with at this point, Android. Mr. Old School went on, quote, "They need to adopt the Android OS ASAP. This will allow other users to keep their beloved form factor and have full compatibility," end quote. Now, there's some features on BlackBerry devices that a lot of people like. I mean, there are. Some people like that QWERTY keyboard. They like the full touch keyboard. They like that ability to be able to keep up with their actual keyboard and use their thumbs or their mouse or the split screen, whatever it is. They like that form factor in BlackBerry. And BlackBerry also went on the books this week. CEO John Chen, he got on and he released a blog post citing, quote, "If apps like Netflix don't work on our platform, it's discrimination and should be illegal," unquote. John Chen actually went on where he is looking for, he has made a presentation to the United States FCC concerning, he wants app neutrality, where all apps should be available on all platforms. Now, apps such as Netflix, they're available on iOS. They're also available on Android. They're also available on Microsoft. Most of those apps were designed by developers and then released and rolled out. If BlackBerry doesn't have the developers that can keep up, then that's their loss, unfortunately. The blog post does go on, quote, "Unlike BlackBerry, which allows iPhone users to download and use our BBM service, Apple does not allow BlackBerry or Android users to download Apple's iMessage service," unquote. So what? People in the iOS utilize iMessage. iMessage doesn't have to be shared with everybody. The folks at BlackBerry made BlackBerry Messenger available to the masses in an effort to keep their operating system relevant. Is it relevant? I really don't think so. With the market share that BlackBerry is losing every year, it doesn't make any sense for people to keep up with the BlackBerry. I mean, Mr. Old School said it, and he has always advocated for BlackBerry. I've said it plenty of times. BlackBerry continues to go down. I mean, releasing one device every 3 years just isn't doing it for them. They had a really long dry spell where they didn't release anything. And when they stopped releasing things, people moved to other devices. They moved over to the iPhone. They moved over to Android. They moved to Samsung. If they needed an enterprise solution, they went over to Samsung because of Samsung Knox. They went over to the iPhone because of ActiveSync. You know, different things. They're not staying competitive. And now he wants to bitch and moan because developers aren't producing for him. Another thing that he went up citing, quote, another way to say prohibited from discriminating in this case would be forced to develop apps for all platform, even those with market share that barely registers on most monthly charts. End quote. This is once again, folks, in reference to BlackBerry. As I said, when an app is produced for a third-party vendor, we'll say Netflix in this case, okay? Since Netflix is the one that's been used in the example by John Chen, I'll continue to use the same example, okay? Do you think that Netflix produced their own app for the iOS? Do you think they produced their own app for Android? Do you think they produced their own app for Microsoft? They probably, in my opinion, hired a group of developers and said, look, this is what we want, do it, okay? Now, whose responsibility ultimately does it come down to get that Netflix app on a particular device? Is it up to the developers? I mean, it's got to come somewhere. Should it come from Netflix? You know, there's sightings all over the place about how to get Netflix on a BlackBerry device. It's on crackberry.com, which is it's an unauthorized BlackBerry site, but it has a lot of how-tos and workarounds for the BlackBerry operating system. You know, John Chen's just sitting here crying about this, okay? He's trying to draw attention to himself, keep his operating system and his device relevant. I'm inclined to side up with Mr. Old School on this and say they either need to adopt the Android operating system or skin the Android operating system to where they have the ability to sideload their apps onto their devices regularly. I mean, you can incorporate a majority of Android devices on a new BlackBerry device, but you can't get them all because there is the underlying BlackBerry, the BES is what it's called, okay? Whether or not giving it a complete Android overlay or a complete BlackBerry overlay would resolve the issue, I'm not a developer, so I don't quite fully know. I am a developer supporter, because there's a lot of things going on in the developer market that interest me quite a bit. But is this going to continue to move forward and be a thorn in the side of BlackBerry? I mean, 2 weeks ago, BlackBerry had an offer to be bought. Samsung said, hey, we want to buy you. And BlackBerry said, no, we're not going to go anywhere. They also went on later to say, that's just a rumor. Nobody's, you know, we're not talking or we're not saying anything. But the bottom line, what does BlackBerry want to do? Do they think that they can take their market share and become who they were back in the 90s? I don't think that's possible right now. With the move that Microsoft has made with the release of their Windows 10 or the announcement of their Windows 10, I think that BlackBerry is going to get squeezed out of this. And I'm not quite sure what is next for the folks at BlackBerry concerning this. A blog post, you know, app neutrality. Knowing the way the folks at the FCC look at this, it's not up to the manufacturer. It's up to the developers. If BlackBerry wants an app to function on their proprietary operating system, they need to get their developers on the ball and put this into play. Okay? Don't bitch about it to everybody else. Get some developers. The BES is locked down. It's a proprietary software. It's a proprietary operating system. It does have developer kits that are available. But on the flip side of that, they're available to a select number. How can Netflix design an app to work on a BlackBerry device if they're not going to make it available? He needs to go to his developers, say, hey, build this app. Send it to Netflix, get it approved so it can work. And then they need to stay on top of it with maintenance because there are things that change. You know, 2015 is going to be an interesting year just for the simple fact that if BlackBerry continues to drop like it is, bitching on a blog post isn't going to make any waves, okay? It's not. I'm sorry. BlackBerry doesn't have enough going for it at this rate. Now, if they would have done this 10 years ago, 15 years ago, back when they started their down curve, it might have been a different story. But right now, they're not quite bottomed out, but they're scraping the bottom. They're getting close, okay? They are getting close. As I mentioned in headlines today, Apple Pay has made a huge surge in popularity. Consumers and marketeers and store owners who at one point in time frowned upon Apple Pay, they've gone ahead and they've upgraded their cash registers and POS systems to be able to accommodate the Tap to Pay, the Apple iOS 8 Tap to Pay system, and they're finding an increase in sales. Apple users are coming in, seeing the Tap to Pay logo, and utilizing it more and more. Individuals within the Tap to Pay community are citing that, quote, this is more secure than anything else, unquote. Target, many retailers, a couple times a year, come out citing that they've been hacked and credit card information has been leaked, okay? When Apple came out with this, they did it good because they put a second factor in it. It's a Tap to Pay, it recognizes it, and then it asks you for a PIN number. That's it, okay? So there's a second factor already built into this pay system. Granted, it's a little bit costly, but you don't have to worry about credit card numbers or anything like that getting lost yet, okay? There hasn't been any information put out there citing that there's breaches or leaks or anything of that nature within the Tap to Pay community, but we will see everything that goes on with this, and I'm excited to see mobile payment systems taking a foothold. I'm a Google Wallet user. I just recently got my Google Wallet cards. I like the way they work because I don't have to worry about carrying cash on me. If I don't make it to the bank one particular day, I can move it from my bank to my card and move on with my day. Sure, there's a service fee involved, but it's also a convenience. Apple Tap to Pay, there's a service fee associated with that. You think Apple's going to provide a service like this for free? Right. But there's a service fee associated, and people are using it, claiming that it's a higher form of security. Mr. Old School, he works in the financial sector. I've had many conversations with him concerning stuff like this, and he says the way to redeem all of it is put a second factor in all of it, which is true. If you put a PIN number on it, boom, done. Tap to Pay, you don't have to worry about stuff like that. You're not swiping a card or having to punch in the last four security code or something like that. Most credit card stations you go to, when you swipe your card, it automatically runs it as credit. So if somebody were to get a hold of that card or that number, transfer it over to another card, guess what? Boom! They could charge stuff up and not even have to worry about it. Okay? Fraudulent charges. Yeah, sure, it happens and it works that way. But as security continues to be on the forefront of everybody's mind, and the second factor of authentication continues to be exciting for everybody, and as everybody wants the convenience of moving forward in this industry, what's going to be next? I mean, we're already majority wireless, and different people can put me under fire for whichever direction you want to go with this, because ultimately speaking, I say it every time. It's almost like I was saying sauce for the longest time. I still say it. Privacy on the internet is a paradox, and this is one of those things. It's going to happen. There's going to be somebody who gets bored in their basement one day, and they find a security vulnerability in Tap to Pay. Okay, but right now, cards are still so popular, people don't have to worry about that yet. But once we get everybody on board, all the early adopters and as it matures and continues to move on in the industry and things get better and better and better, we're going to find that there's more and more and more going on that could continue to either create problems or create solutions. It's a six one way, half dozen another. But I think Apple is doing the right thing here in moving forward. I think Google is also doing the right thing in making their cap to pay a little bit more available. Problem that I'm seeing with this, though, is every manufacturer has a proprietary unit that they use. Apple, you have to get their head unit to be able to use the tap to pay. Samsung, same thing. Google, same thing. Not every store is going to want to be able to have all of these things. I mean, debit cards and credit cards, it took them, what, 10 years to get full saturation to where it was one unit to be able to read it all? Now they've got to change everything over, 3, 4, 5 different types of units to be able to read one tap to pay. Ultimately, it all runs through NFC, but it still has its own unit system that it uses to communicate with the secure servers. Tap to pay, once again, it is something that interests me, okay? I like the convenience of being able to use it. I don't have tap to pay because here in Illinois, we're a little bit behind on the times, but I have read the rumors, read the reports on who is using it and the appreciation that they have on it as well. Now, folks, here we go. Microsoft, early last week, went on and they had their Windows 10 release. They had their announcement. And yes, I'm going to talk a little bit not only about mobile, but I'm also going to talk about desktops. Why? Because Microsoft went out and they released their Windows 10. And it's 10 that's going to go over all of their devices. It looks like they've eliminated Windows Mobile because it's become integrated with the desktop experience. Okay. One thing that I have to say I enjoyed about this presentation is they kind of adapted their presentation. They changed it around. Instead of being the typical Steve Ballmer getting out and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, there wasn't too awful many applause breaks or a whole lot of excitement. It was a pretty dead crowd, but they followed the format of the way you're supposed to give a presentation. Okay? If you look at Tim Cook or Steve Jobs and the way that they give a presentation, and I know I say it, folks, and I keep saying it, nobody's going to give a presentation like Steve Jobs. Tim Cook does a very good job, okay? He does a very good job. But they all follow the same format. Tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. I mean, you want to make sure people stay on board with what you're going on, you know? And Microsoft did a very good job of this. They started out with heightened corporate security in their presentation to where it's going to be not only a personal device, but also a corporate device with sandboxing included. You're going to be able to separate your profiles to keep your corporate life separate from your personal life. They did a great big presentation on the Windows Insider program, which is our Microsoft development system. It's a live feedback center. Instantaneous in some situations. They also went on the books and they announced that it's going to be a free upgrade for current Windows users on Windows 8, Windows 8.1, and even Windows 7. It's going to be ubiquitous networking, Mr. Old School, here you go, fully functional between all devices with app support. And whether it be the cloud, whether it be desktop, whether it be VPNs, it's all going to be there. And it's going to give that continuity between all of your devices. And if you're fully immersed in the Windows system here, this is a great thing because this is what a lot of people have been looking for years. For those in the desktop space, it's going to return the start menu. A lot of people griping ever since Windows 8 released, that the start menu's gone. They have brought back, I believe it's going to be called the Orb again, which is what they did for Vista and Windows 7. But it's going to come back, and you're going to be able to customize that and utilize that the way that you choose. There's going to be expanded notification panes, not only in the desktop, but also the mobile space, where iOS has a swipe from bottom to top. Android has a slight swipe from top to bottom. Didn't actually give how the notification is going to be activated, but it is going to be seamless notification amongst your devices as well. To apply this to my current lifestyle, I recently made the switch over to Google Voice, which some people are bringing me under fire for, some people are not. But it's kind of a running joke because people will call me just for shits and giggles when they know I'm working on homework. I have my phone on one side of me, my tablet here, my laptop, my Linux box, and then, when I'm in full homework mode, I have all my devices around me running what I need to do. And when the phone rings, the tablet rings, the laptop rings, the Linux box rings, everything rings at once. The first time it happened, it threw me off. But now I appreciate that. I like it because anywhere I am in the house, if I leave my phone in the kitchen, I don't have to hear, hey, your phone's ringing. It's ringing right there on my laptop, and I can answer it from my laptop if I so choose. Text messages, same way. If I don't want to type it on my phone, I can turn to my laptop and I can type it there. Not a problem, at least for me. This gives the full breadth of continuity between your applications, your devices, and your user experience. They've adapted Continuum, which for Apple users, it's classified as continuity. If your device is hooked up to a keyboard or mouse, whether it be through Bluetooth or hardware, or if you've got a Surface and it's got the little magnetic switches, and you disconnect it, it automatically switches over. Touch is automatically enabled, and it's supposed to be something that is extremely proficient and easy to utilize as well. Universal app support is something else that Windows 10 is supposed to be able to produce. Cortana is a complete personal digital assistant. It's more conversational. The live demo that they had with Cortana, I was extremely impressed with it. They have what's called a Cortana notebook, which means instead of storing all of your information in the cloud like Google does, it keeps it right there in a notebook on your desktop system, and that is what you want Cortana to know. If you don't want Cortana to know something, you either delete it or you don't tell her. That's the way it works. Cortana is designed to work on all Microsoft devices. Essentially, this could turn any HD TV that has an Xbox hooked up to it into a smart TV. Now, many different sides of this argument are already surfacing for the simple fact when the Xbox One came out, it's always listening. Oh my goodness, da 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 da. But there's that activation word as well. Okay? There's supposed to be a diversification or a specification that you can enable that turns the speaker on and shuts it off, but it still has that always listening thing. So I'm not quite sure how that's fully going to integrate into the personal experience, but it is something that's exciting because they're incorporating the Xbox world into their universal Microsoft world, and that, I think, is going to be a very good move for the folks at Microsoft. They've advanced OneDrive functionality. They've made it to where it is totally ubiquitous and totally seamless. They've added music as well. And in their presentation, they said, if you add music to this playlist, it magically appears on another playlist. No, it's just cloud-enabled, okay? Increased cloud support, which, once again, and I hate doing this, but folks in the Android and the iOS space have been able to do that for a while, but Microsoft is getting on board with this. They've done away with Internet Explorer, finally. I mean, some people swear against it, some people swear for it, but they've done away with the Internet Explorer. They've adapted Project Spartan, which is a clean, polished and very, very sexy look. I watched the demo on this. I've looked up a few other demos concerning Project Spartan on YouTube, and it is a very sharp, nice-looking browser. Very interactive. It looks like it's easy to use, and I'm looking to see when this actually releases. I'm looking to see what needs to happen and what is going to happen with this project as the life of Windows 10 increases. There's added Xbox app support for Windows 10. You're going to be able to download Windows 10 either emulators or skins onto your Xbox so you can continue to have that ubiquitous flow between all your devices. Once again, the base, the building block of Windows 10 is the ubiquitous networking. Okay? It's the ubiquitous experience. Thank you again, Mr. Old School, for giving me another term. Yes, ubiquitous. It's going to take it from your desktop and throw it to your tablet. It's going to take it from your tablet and throw it to your phone. Take it from your phone and throw it to your Xbox. I mean, there's a reason why Xbox is the number one selling game system in the world. Okay? This is just tapping into that profit, that ability, that desire, that sleek, that polished. I mean, if this goes properly, it's going to take Microsoft and jet them very, very high, very, very quickly. Samsung Hub, which is an 84-inch collaborative board, and if you just Google this, you can see, I mean, schools nowadays, they're adapting their technology higher and advancing it to make it better than what it was. And the collaborative board is just a huge touchscreen that you can use to write and draw and sketch and things of that nature. And then they also went into their great big Windows holographic HoloLens and HoloStudio presentation, which is a virtual design studio. You want to talk about holodecks? This is it right here. Put on the glasses, and it gives you a fully immersive. I think this was designed to combat Google Glass, and I think with the way that it's set up and the way that it's designed, it's going to be a very good competitor in the wearable market. Now, granted, you need a system to be able to operate it and things of that nature, but I think when it comes to design, architects, taking virtual tours, I think this is an extra bonus for a lot of people. They closed up their presentation citing, quote, "Move from people who need Windows to people who want and love Windows." Now, I'm not a Windows user, okay? But after seeing this presentation and the highlights and the new things that are coming out on the Windows space, I think this could be a good thing that a lot of people are going to want to move to. And it might, you know, those that are kind of on the borderline or corporations that are on the borderline switching back and forth between Android and iOS, I think this might get the enterprise back for them in a major, major way. Mr. Old School did reach out to me, and he went on the record citing that he's interested to see what Microsoft is going to do, and he's calling it now that Microsoft is going to be making some great things out of Windows 10, and I'm definitely interested to see exactly what Windows 10 is going to be doing in the future as well. Now, I've run a little bit long, and I do apologize, but I'm getting ready to close this up, and we'll be keeping an eye on many of these stories as time continues on. As always, folks, make sure you're checking out the brand new Trending Topics Network. Check it out every day. We've just made a major expansion. We've got lots of new shows. There is plenty of stuff for anybody who wants something that is trending. All the way from professional wrestling, all the way to personal opinion and speculation. We also have NFL Easy Picks. We've got Anything Goes. We've got pop culture, we've got news, we've got games, we've got mobile technology. Everything is here, folks. It's your one-stop shop for all your multimedia needs. So check us out, the brand new TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. From all of us to all of you, I'm Piper the DJ, your mobile host. I'm taking a bite out of the mobile space. Good night.